Okay, we are live with Alexander McCurris in London. Alexander, how you doing this Saturday morning for you?
Well, can I just say, I mean, obviously there's a war going on and that's always stressful and distressing, but in all other respects, I'm well and fine and very glad to be back and discussing these matters with the community. It's always calming in some ways to be doing that.
All right. So before we get to the news, a quick hello to everyone that is watching us on Odyssey, on Rumble, on YouTube, and our locals community, the durand.locals.com. Also check us out on Substack as well. I have a link for all of that in the description box down below. And a quick hello to our moderators, Alexander, in the YouTube chat. We got Inside Russia Business with us. We got Zariel also moderating. And I think that's it for now. Yeah. Okay. So those are our moderators. Thank you so much for helping us out. And Alexander, before we get to the questions, we have Trump talking about an unconditional surrender. That is what he will accept from Iran. And we have the president of Iran, Pezeshkian, saying that that there will be no surrender.
Yeah.
And he also said that as far as the Gulf states, the attacks, the council, the Iranian council has decided that the attacks on the Gulf states will stop unless they attack Iran. He kind of left it a bit open-ended, I would say. What does that mean? Are the military bases, are they still fair game? We'll find out.
But we will indeed find out. Yeah.
But this could also be interpreted as an off-ramp, perhaps. Maybe it's an off-ramp to the United States. Maybe it's some sort of overture to the GCC states. Maybe it's a message to get the military bases out of the Middle East. Maybe it could signal Iran is husbanding its missiles. Could mean a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on Trump's statement and on Pezeshkian's statement?
Right. Let's start with Trump's statement. Trump has said that he wants unconditional surrender from Iran. He says that he wants to choose Iran's supreme leader himself. He says all of these extraordinary, very grandiose things. He said very similar things during the June 2025 war. He said during the June 2025 war that he also wanted unconditional surrender. I remember when he published that on Truth Social, I was absolutely horrified. I said, what does unconditional surrender even mean? And that's the same question that I'm asking now. Now, I thought back in June 2025 that the fact that Trump was talking in this way was a sign that he was under enormous stress. It looked as if the Straits of Hormuz were about to be shut. The Iranians were taking the first steps to do that. It looked to me like a sign of panic. And in fact, shortly after, we learned that he and the Israelis were asking the Iranians for a ceasefire. So it is not impossible that we are looking at the same thing, that this is more than anything else an expression of panic and alarm on Trump's part. And I think what is causing that panic and alarm is not just American losses and American damage across the Middle East. And now we're getting sufficient information to be able to say that there has, in fact, been extensive damage done to American bases, that radar stations, all of these things have indeed been destroyed. But I think what is really frightening him and spooking him out, though he pretends otherwise, is the enormous surge in energy costs. The fact that oil prices are now above $90 a barrel. And if this war continues and the Straits of Hormuz remain shut, we've now had all of these warnings by the Gulf producers that they're going to have to shut down production and declare force majeure next week. He's looking at $150 a barrel, $200 a barrel, all of this heading into the midterms. It's clear that he didn't plan or expect this. He thought that Khamenei's death would lead to a power vacuum in Iran. And I get the sense that he's panicking. So I think that's probably what this unconditional surrender is all about. But the trouble is, Trump is also in a state of extraordinary, I can almost describe it as intoxication at the same time. So is his war secretary, if I can put it like this. I mean, Hegseth's behavior is becoming more and more bizarre and outlandish. For them to seek for an off-ramp now is going to be extremely difficult. So, you know, I think it oscillates. I mean, Trump also said that, you know, he's not looking for to make Iran a democracy. It can remain a religious state, a dictatorship even. That's not what he cares about. He wants it, however, to change his policies. He's saying all kinds of different things. And as I said, I think what we should see it as is a sign of the enormous stress he's under. Now, let's turn to Pezeshkian. Now, I've been trying to find in the Iranian media the actual text of this statement that Pezeshkian has made. And I can't find it unless it's a report in the Iranian media, a very lengthy report that's appearing all over the Iranian media, of certain comments that Pezeshkian made to none other than Vladimir Putin of Russia. Now, this isn't mentioned, but Pezeshkian and Putin had a very long telephone conversation yesterday. And it seems to me that we're getting all sorts of reports that some of the Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia, are now making outreaches to try to see if this thing could stop. They don't want production of oil to stop. They want the Straits of Hormuz to be opened up again to trade. They did not expect to find themselves in this situation. So the report that the Iranian media is carrying of Pezeshkian's words, and these are words that he said to Putin, yes, Iran is very sorry for these attacks on the American bases because they have taken place in the territory of the Arab states. Iran has no unfriendly intentions towards the Arab states. And Putin, by the way, said that when he was talking, he said to Pezeshkian that he's partly talking to him on behalf of the Arab states. Pezeshkian went on to say that Iran has to defend itself, and that does involve inevitably attacks on bases from which American attacks on Iran are being carried out. So you see a certain shift in language. Okay, the nuance is somewhat different. But what Iran wants is certainly a cessation of hostilities, but also a situation, an agreement with the Arab states that regional security will be decided by the states of the region itself, not by outsiders, which of course means the United States. So looking, putting all that together, one could see what the Iranians might be trying to achieve. And one could see also what the Russians are trying to achieve. In other words, a direct negotiation between Iran and the Gulf states, brokered by the Russians, cutting out the United States completely, agreeing that the American bases in the Middle East should be removed, and some kind of security architecture created between Iran and the Gulf states, without the United States involved. Now, I have to say that is incredibly ambitious. Whether the Gulf states would be prepared to go that far is a massive question. I would have guessed no, actually, but you know, who knows? But that seems to me to be what the Iranians are holding out for. So they're basically telling the Gulf states, look, we have no unfriendly intentions or purposes towards you. We have no unfriendly intentions or purposes towards Azerbaijan, which was also discussed, by the way, over the course of this call. But we cannot have a situation where all of these countries host bases, which are then used to attack us.
Well, I would say that the Gulf states cannot go that far. No, I mean, no. It's going to be impossible for for the current leadership.
Yes.
To kick out the United States, to make a deal without the United States.
Yes.
But they have realized that the United States cannot protect them. And that was the deal.
Correct.
That was the deal in place. You provide your military bases, you provide the protection, and then we sell an image of peace, stability, business investment, real estate, expats coming to live here, and all of these things, tourism.
Yes.
That's gone. That's shattered.
That's shattered. And in order to get it restored, you need to have some kind of security agreement with Iran. And the Russians are there to, as I say, try and broker it. That is the negotiation that's taking place. So it is a negotiation, some kind of negotiation between the Gulf states, the Arab states, and the Iranians with the Russians involved. That looks to me what is happening. Now, I find it very interesting, by the way, that the media here in London is not reporting the fact that Pezeshkian had this very extensive conversation with Putin yesterday. Of course, what we have had in the US are the first admissions that Russia is indeed providing satellite intelligence and targeting assistance to Iran. So the Russians are involved, probably not on an enormous scale, but they are involved in some way, and they do have leverage.
Completely expected. Russia and China providing this intel if they are indeed providing this intel, but let's assume that they are. I don't think this is any surprise to anyone. Actually, they're getting off kind of easy, the United States, when you think about it, given everything that the United States has provided to Ukraine, going all the way back to 2014 with the overthrow of the democratically elected, internationally recognized government in Ukraine. You go from 2014 all the way up to present day. What the U.S. has given to Ukraine doesn't even compare to providing intel to Iran.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't in no conceivable way. I mean, I read an article in, I think it was again the Daily Telegraph. Daily Telegraph is the place to look for these sort of articles, that this was Russia's revenge for Ukraine. I mean, that is ridiculous. If the Russians really were out for revenge, we would be looking at a completely different situation. I mean, the help that they would be providing to Iran would be on a completely different scale. But I mean,
there would be no aircraft carriers in the region.
There would be no aircraft carriers.
Russia was really going to provide the military weapons to Iran.
That is exactly correct. Yeah. But the Russians have their own interests. They want to have good relations with the Gulf producers, the Arab states. This is a long-standing priority for the Russians. The Russians also are mindful of the interests of other BRICS states, China, India, and all of those. They need to appear a responsible player. And besides, we come up against that long-standing, perennial Russian objective, which is to seek stability however and wherever it can be found. In the states around their periphery, around their own country. So this is why they're pursuing that kind of objective.
So the Gulf states, they can't break free from the United States. It's going to be impossible for them to remove the U.S. military bases if they even want to do that. I'm not saying they even want to do that, but okay. The U.S., the Gulf states now understand that the U.S. cannot provide protection to them.
Yes.
If Iran in its current form exists,
yes,
the U.S. is going to be very alarmed at these developments, understanding that they cannot provide protection to the Gulf states, understanding that the Gulf states may be speaking to Russia, maybe speaking to China, maybe even thinking about disengaging with the U.S. and perhaps scaling down the U.S. military presence. So the neocons in the Trump administration, of which there are a lot of now, not only neocons in the administration, but also neocons advising the Trump administration. There are rumors that Condoleezza Rice now is floating in and out of the White House. What they're going to tell Trump is you've got to remove Iran now. Yeah. Because if Iran exists, if Iran is left to stand, the current government with its current military capabilities, we're not going to be able to maintain a presence in the Middle East, or at least the Gulf states are going to look at us and say, well, you guys can't really provide protection to us from Iran. So why should we have you around?
Well, indeed, absolutely. Redouble, escalate even further, right, conduct even more strikes against Iran. And in fact, this morning, there are reports that a third U.S. Navy carrier,
the
George H.W. Bush, is on the way, which is exactly what you would expect in this kind of situation. The stakes for the United States are getting higher and higher. If only 10% of what Pezeshkian is talking about happens, not a complete dismantling of U.S. bases, which I agree. I mean, I can't imagine the Gulf states agreeing to something that radical. But if, say, we start to get security agreements between Iran and the Gulf states, with the Gulf states and Iran coming to regional arrangements for security, just to say, then, of course, for the neocons, this is an absolute nightmare. It means that Iran becomes integrated and accepted as a major player in the Middle East, which is, of course, the opposite of what they've been trying to achieve. It enormously increases Russian and, by the way, Chinese influence in the Middle East. So, of course, that means you've got to intensify even more, redouble even further the conflict against Iran, and try and achieve the regime change there, which is what this thing has been all about over all along. And they'll be putting enormous pressure on Trump. They'll be saying that if you don't do this, you betrayed the United States, you betrayed Israel, you betrayed the entire Western system in the Middle East, you've empowered the forces of evil in Tehran. And Trump seems to be extraordinarily susceptible to this kind of language. Also, they will tell him something else, which he will like even less. If you do this, you are a loser. And Trump hates being seen as a loser. This is the thing that agitates him and frightens him more than anything else. So you have all of that playing out. And of course, as far as the neocons are concerned, a trifling matter like an explosion in the oil price, a depression in the United States, economic crisis, crisis in the financial markets. That sort of thing has never been known to stop the neocons. They've never concerned about things like that. On the contrary, any hint that the United States might be getting weaker makes them want to become even more aggressive, in order to impress on everybody around the world, first and foremost themselves, that actually the United States is even stronger. Just to say.
Yeah, they've got Trump isolated. Vance is out of the picture, completely out of the picture.
Yes.
Gabbard disappeared.
Yeah.
The neocons are probably telling Trump, the Lindsey Grahams and all these people. Mm-hmm. They're probably telling the Trump administration, if you don't get this done, then you're going to be the one that's going to be thrown under the bus.
Absolutely.
The Democrats are going to win. We're going to impeach you, Republicans and Democrats. We're going to go after you.
Yeah.
We're going to go after you. We're going to go after your family.
Yes.
Who knows what else they're going to do to Trump? Who knows what information they have and what else they're going to throw out to the media, of which is integrated, the entire media is integrated with the whole neocons as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, for Trump, this is becoming existential. For him.
Absolutely. It was an extraordinary, reckless, irrational gamble. He shut out everybody who was trying to tell him that this is an extremely risky, wrong, unethical thing to do. He shut out everybody. He listened to Netanyahu. He listened to all these people around him. He was persuaded that it was all going to be very easy. The neocons always say it's easy. The neocons always tell you how easy it is going to be And they come along with evidence to prove it. They provide you with opinion polls that 80% of the people in Iran are yearning to overthrow the government of Iran. They tell you that the Iranian army military security system is terrible. They tell you that the Israelis have absolute control of everything that goes on in the ground, on the ground in Iran. So I mean, the thing to do always is to pay no attention to these people, because the arguments they always give, the facts they always trot out, always and invariably turn out to be wrong. As we could see at the moment, Iran is stable. It may not remain so indefinitely, but even CNN, who are there on the ground, are saying it.
Well, we're 1 week into this.
We haven't seen a regime change. Instead, what we're seeing is the Gulf of Hormuz essentially closed and the price of oil rising. And the idea of the US providing naval escorts and insurance to tankers, that's
stupid nonsense.
It's nonsense.
Some of the dumbest stuff that has come out of the Trump White House. And then he had an official, an energy official yesterday, go on to Fox News and say that they're going to take all the oil. That's what this is all about now.
Yes.
It's about all the oil.
All
Meanwhile, you have Bonehead Johnson, Mike Johnson, continuing to say this is not a war. Mm-hmm. He's been saying it now for a week.
Yes.
This is not a war. Their entire messaging is a complete mess.
It is.
An absolute complete mess. Everyone is saying different things. But yes. No one can give a coherent messaging, a reason as to why they're in this.
Exactly.
And they can't even put together three or four simple goals. Why are we doing this?
Exactly.
What are the reasons?
Exactly.
What are the goals of this operation?
Exactly.
Boots on the ground, maybe no boots on the ground, maybe Kurds, maybe not Kurds. We're getting reports about U.S. National Guard now being called up, ready to go into Iran.
Yes.
Trump can't even make up his mind.
No.
I like boots on the ground. I don't like boots on the ground. Maybe we'll go with the Kurds. Maybe we won't go with the Kurds. It's a complete, utter mess.
It is.
He has got, and I've been saying this for a while now, go back to all our videos from going back to a year. I've been saying Trump's communication team is the absolute worst.
Absolutely, yes.
They rely on slogans for the dumbed-down masses. Peace through strength. Bravo. Well said. Real good. Whatever the fuck that even means.
Exactly.
But he's turned it into a foreign policy.
Exactly.
Our policy is peace through strength. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
It's stupid. The whole thing is dumb.
Yes.
But you're right. You're actually right, Alexander, on the whole Lindsey Graham thing, because the Wall Street Journal even reported it.
Yeah.
If you want to believe what the Wall Street Journal is saying, and I think in this instance, they are reporting accurately. They said it was Lindsey Graham, Jack Keane, some guy, Mark Thiessen. I think he's a writer for the Washington Post. I'm not sure. And all these people were lobbying Netanyahu, of course. These people were pressing Trump over the past year, lobbying him to go to war with Iran, and they were presenting him all these reasons. That's exactly what you said.
Exactly.
Iran is weak. The military is weak. We have to strike now. Netanyahu has given me this intel. Lindsey Graham was taking this intel to Trump. He made all these trips to Israel.
Yeah.
General Jack Keane, who's the absolute worst. Why are you listening to these people?
Exactly.
He was talking about how easy it was going to be to get a regime change and to defeat Iran. Almost all the same things we heard about Project Ukraine.
Exactly.
From the bonehead Biden administration.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. The other problem with Trump, and I'm going to say this, he stopped communicating with his base long ago. The trips that he used to make around the country, which he did, by the way, during his first term, going on these road shows, meeting with people, listening to what they had to say, that did provide some kind of correction to the advice of people like Lindsey Graham. He hasn't done that since he became president. So the result is that he's now fallen in with this awful crowd, and he listens and goes along with what they're saying. By the way, just I'm going to anticipate people are going to say that's an apologetic for Trump. It is not. It is the exact opposite. It shows, again, a weak insecure, unstable president, somebody who's unfit to wield the kind of office that he now has.
Yeah, I mean, look, even if Trump makes zero decisions, even if he's just there, you still have to, for appearances, you still have to get him to speak to the media. He still has to sign things. He still has to present it as the president putting forward the policy. So whichever way you look at it, whether you believe it's a strong executive, the system is a strong executive, the system has nothing to do with the president, whatever, the decision's already made, you still have to get the president, this person, on board.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. He's completely on board with this. And you're right. He doesn't do any rallies. He doesn't go out and speak to the American people. He sits in the Oval Office and he takes questions and that's it. From reporters, dumb questions. He gives dumb answers.
Yeah.
He's never pressed on anything.
No. And he talks, he thinks about ballrooms, ballrooms and all that.
Curtains, kind of drapes. Curtains.
Right,
stuff like that, and how the U.S. is the hottest country in the world. What is that? What does that even fucking mean? We're the hottest country in the world.
Exactly.
Is there some sort of Bloomberg list of the hottest countries, the top 10 hottest countries in the world that we don't know about?
Exactly.
It's just dumb stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway. Is there anything else that you want to cover, Alexander, before we get to the questions?
Yeah, I just wanted to repeat again to reemphasize and underline what Cyrus and Alex were telling us in the live stream yesterday, that if this is some sort of overcomplicated plan to weaken China, it's not going to weaken China. The idea, I mean, this is all over the place.
Whether China ran away or Russia.
China ran away, China. Exactly.
It's not going to weaken China.
Please, let's stop talking about China all the time. The Chinese will find their oil. They'll find it at a better price than we will in Europe. Just to say that they will come through. It's we in the West that we need to be worried about.
Exactly. Europe's in big trouble. Yeah. Bessent is now talking about lifting sanctions on Russia.
Oh, no. Yeah.
he's going to go to China just to give everyone an idea how stupid this administration is.
Yes.
He's going to go to China in April. Mm. And he's going to tell the Chinese to stop buying Russian oil. And yesterday he gives an interview saying we're going to lift the sanctions off of Russian oil that we put on Russian oil because of the war that we now have with Iran and because of the Strait of Hormuz. So now we're going to lift all the sanctions on Russian oil. And and we're also going to allow India to refine Russian oil. It's beyond dumb.
Absolutely. By the way, just to say something about that, I understand it was the U.S. that contacted India.
Yes.
To tell them,
absolutely.
You can stop buying
when
Russian
did India
oil.
Say they're not? They're going to stop buying Russian oil.
Exactly. 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 Exactly.
They never said they're going to stop buying Russian oil.
No. Oh, of course, they're making out that it was the Indians who came to them to ask for the license to buy Russian oil. The Indians never said anything about it. People need to stop paying any attention to what comes out of the administration about these things. Unfortunately, and one has to say this, these people lie constantly about these matters and about lots of others.
Yeah, they make stuff up believe the stuff that they make up.
Exactly, exactly.
Commander Crossfire says, now they stood beside the treasure on the mountain, dark and red, turned the stone and looked beneath it. Peace on earth was all it said.
Quite true.
Is it Khamenei dynasty bad optics for Trump? Yeah.
Well, it is. It's extremely bad optics for Trump. I'm not sure what it does for Iran either, by the way, just to say. I mean, this whole thing started with a revolt against a monarchy and replacing one supreme leader with another supreme leader who's the son of the previous supreme leader, has a look about it of dynastic succession. So I wonder how popular in Iran that's going to be. But I doubt that's the main issue at the moment. And I can understand at a political level why maintaining continuity is important. Yeah.
Well, you go to war in Afghanistan for 20 years to remove the Taliban, only to have the Taliban come back. So you take out Khamenei only to have Khamenei.
Khamenei, and even a more a younger, more hardline Khamenei, apparently.
Yeah. Turbo Tall says Pezeshkian just declared never surrender.
I absolutely. I mean, he said that. He said that as well. He said that to Putin in this call, which nobody's mentioning. And he said, which is, of course, what the Iranians are saying altogether. How can they surrender when Trump is calling for unconditional surrender? I mean, that statement, if taken literally, and the Iranians have no choice, by the way, but to take it literally, means that there can be no negotiations because Trump is looking for negotiations. If you take him literally, he's looking for capitulation.
Yeah. Well, Araghchi said negotiations. Why? I mean, you guys attacked us twice when we negotiated with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Haruko, thank you for the two super chats. R.W. Swal says, very soon, if not already, civilian deaths in Iran will exceed those in Ukraine. Since February 2022, will the ICC be issuing a warrant to arrest Trump? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. No, of course they won't. I mean, the ICC, Alex has done brilliant programs about it, is an institution that no one outside a few lawyers in London and a few misguided people in Berlin takes seriously anymore.
Yeah. R.W. Swal says Trump shouldn't sack those who tell him the truth.
No, of course he shouldn't. But of course he does. How he has ever allowed Lindsey Graham to gain so much influence over his administration is incredible.
It's incredible.
Alex puts it exactly right. The real president of the United States is Lindsey Graham. It is not Donald Trump. Lindsey Graham conducts diplomacy. He runs foreign policy. He chooses priorities. And he just decides when the United States goes to war.
Sanjiva says, hello, Duran. Hope you are well. Blip Blop Zoop says, Pezeshkian, unless attacks are carried out from there. That's the quote.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. I've seen that. But as I said, that those words can carry all kinds of multiple.
If you assume those are the words, what does that tell you? Let's say those are the words that he said.
Yes.
What does that tell you?
Yes.
What's the message that you think he's putting out there?
Well, what he's telling to the Arab states is we are being attacked by the United States, and the United States is using bases that you host in order to attack us. How can we disregard that? That seems to be the message. But the other part of the message is, look, we are not looking to be your enemies. It's just that you have these false friends. Get rid of these false friends and we will be your friends forever. That's basically what he's saying. If you think about this.
Right. Sancheva says 82nd Airborne has been called in from Louisiana, source in Toslava. So ground offensive definitely happening. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the 82nd, exactly. But to repeat again, I these are exceptionally well-trained soldiers. But it's a light infantry force. It's not going to be able to march on Tehran. Well, and the logistics to do this anyway, aren't there?
Is the goal to march on Tehran, or is the goal just to create the dynamics of chaos?
Well, perhaps it's the second.
Yeah.
But then deploying ground troops like that creates the real risk of much higher casualties.
Jeff Files says people think they have a strategy. No, not really.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they're making it up from one day to the next.
I agree with that, Jeff. Spot on. They don't have a strategy. The way Hegseth talks about Iran and war killing is unbelievable. If North Korea were speaking in this way, we would call them barbaric.
Well, I mean, I consider it, as I said, borderline. It's irrational. Borderline insane, frankly. I mean, he's clearly completely out of his depth. He should never have become defense secretary.
Agreed. Ibsen says, thank you. Eddie V2 is a new member to the Durant community. Pinto Raul says, projected economic downturns in the U.S. may compel the Trump administration to pivot or scale back its current international engagements. Your thoughts?
Well, it's possible, but I mean, go back to what we said at the beginning, that the neocons have never allowed economics or logistics or issues of availability of weapons or any of those kind of things to influence their decisions. On the contrary, it's more likely, if they sense a downturn is coming, to want to escalate even more. That is what the neocons are. That's how they work. That's how they think.
No reverse gear. There's also something else you say about the neocons, Alexander, which no one talks about, but yes. you say it often, which is the neocon wars. They always start out big.
Big.
And then they turn into disasters, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Jungle Jin says, Azerbaijan's bellicosity, isn't it vulnerable?
Yes, it's extremely vulnerable. And I've been hearing rumors. And I mean, they're more than rumors. I mean, they're reports from Russia that the Russians are losing patience with Aliyev and that they've actually begun in secret criminal proceedings against him and other members of the Azerbaijanian elite, and that they have indictments ready because of drugs, involvement in the international drugs trade and other criminal activities on Russian territory, just to say.
Sanjeva says, tourism to everywhere is getting hit as most airlines use Gulf as a hub. Yeah. And to that high oil gas price, world GDP will certainly nosedive.
Of course.
Good point. Demon Jump says, much love from behind enemy lines in Epstein's Down. Principled Uncertainty says, simple question for the Warhawks. Would we in the West have had more or less terrorism without Israel's endless wars of peace? Honest answers only.
Well, the honest answer is that Israel has sought peace, which it could easily have done, which could have absolutely properly done. I think we would be in a much more peaceful situation altogether. That is my view.
The hockey goalie says, is Iran apology a tactical mistake given attacks stretching U.S. resources and causing economic pressure, likely to be interpreted as a sign of weakness? That's a good point.
That is a very good point.
Could Pezeshkian's statement be interpreted as a sign of
weakness? Yeah, I think some people in Washington are undoubtedly going to interpret it in exactly that way. And that, unfortunately, brings us back to Pezeshkian. He has consistently shown this softness relative to the United States and Israel as well, but especially the United States. And this has always, in my opinion, played against Iran's interests. His predecessor, Ebrahim Raisi, who is a much, much tougher character, I think handled this sort of thing much better. That's not to say, by the way, and I've said this already, that I don't consider Pezeshkian a decent man. I think he's a very decent man, a very nice man. But I don't think he's the right person to be president of Iran at this time.
R.W. Swal says it's actually a war against China and Russia.
Well, I think the neocons undoubtedly think so. They're coming up with all of these incredible strategies, you know, stop the oil, take control of Iran's oil, use that as leverage against China, all of this. As I said before, this is geopolitics for teenagers. I mean, it's schoolboy stuff. It's not how geopolitics, international affairs, international trade really works.
Can I ask you a question on that, Alexander? Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever gotten your thoughts on this. What do you really think is happening with Venezuela?
Oh, that's a good question.
Trump is talking all the oil is coming to the U.S. And you know, Cyrus brought up an interesting point, which we've talked about in the past video about Venezuela, which is whatever oil the U.S. gets and then sells to China, Trump has opened up all of this escrow, this account, which is actually located, I believe, in Dubai, in the UAE, which is holding all of the revenue, which is very, very odd to have this in some sort of an offshore account. I mean, what do you think is really going on there? And do you think Venezuela is really going to be pivoting full into the U.S.'s sphere?
Well, they continuously say otherwise. I mean, in every other respect, their international positions remain exactly what they were in Maduro's time. Just to say, I mean, if you look at their voting in the United Nations, if you look at their rhetoric, it hasn't changed. And of course, the same people are in charge. And what's happening is that they are selling their oil. But they're now using the United States as their broker. And the United States collects this oil and it has to sell it to someone. And it sells it to China because it's China that wants to refine. So China's okay with this. From a Chinese point of view, this works. This isn't good for Venezuela because the receipts go ultimately to Donald Trump. I have to say, that seems astonishing. I mean, as Cyrus actually said, you couldn't make that up, but it's happening. And very, very few people say anything. So China gets its oil. Trump gets the money. I'm not sure what Venezuela's getting, whether it's getting some of the money or not. I'm not sure. Craig Murray, you know, the British commentator, former ambassador, who, by the way, I should say, I know and consider a friend. He has recently been to Venezuela. He went to Caracas and to all of these places. He said that the situation there is stable, that the shops are filled, and that he was surprised at how stable overall the situation in Venezuela at this particular time was. And he didn't sense that there was any particular change in the government's position and that the Chavista movement in his own particular regions, the places where it's strong, remains as strong as ever. I passed that on. That's what Craig said, and he's been there.
Mehdi 833 says, could Iran become Russia and China's proxy war against the West?
It's possible. The longer this goes on for, the more likely that possibility becomes. At the moment, Putin, for all the reasons we discussed earlier in this program, is trying to act, I wouldn't even call it exactly as a mediator, but more like an honest broker between the Iranians and the Gulf states. Notice, not between the Iranians and the Americans. Putin conspicuously, by the way, this is an important fact, he's not spoken to Trump at any point since the start of this crisis. In fact, he hasn't spoken to Trump at all ever since the Valdai attack. Just to say. But if these attempts to try and find some way diplomatically forward don't work and the war drags on, then whatever help the Russians are currently giving in terms of intelligence and targeting and satellite data and all of that, it will increase. And the Chinese will become involved too, because it's in their interests. They will not, quite apart from whatever game they're playing in the Middle East, helping Iran in that way gives them leverage over the United States, exactly as the Russians and the Chinese discovered when, way back in the 60s, they started to give military help to North Vietnam. By the way, that help to North Vietnam didn't come immediately. The Soviets and the Chinese didn't switch on a tap and start sending large flows of weapons to North Vietnam. The day the Americans arrived in Vietnam, the day the Americans started bombing in Vietnam. It was as the war began to drag on that the Russians and the Chinese began to sense that there was an opportunity there. And they will be making exactly the same calculations with Iran this time.
Zariel says, let me please start off this live by congratulating not only the dumbass Arab nations, but also their dumbass European partners for doing something so stupid. You can't make this shit up. You were all warned by Kissinger to be an enemy of the U.S. is dangerous. To be their friend is deadly. But you dim-witted idiots ignored their threat and still sucked up to their butt. Don't complain now for getting what you paid for.
You are completely right, Zariel, our good friend. By the way, just to say, I think it was the EU Energy Commissioner said yesterday, don't worry about oil prices rising or gas prices rising. We learnt the lesson of 2022.
Yeah.
So we are far better prepared for all of that this time than we were then, which is nuts. I mean, that really is certifiable comment, actually.
They're screwed.
Absolutely.
Jungle Jin says the U.S. plan seems to be to ginger the Kurds and the Azeris to take the northwest border towns. Would Turkey respond if Iran reacted by attacking Azeri assets.
Yes, it did. I mean, this is a potential to get completely out of control. And it was Azerbaijan is now closing its embassy in Tehran, and there's all these sort of things. So this is probably what this is all about. The Russians don't like this. And I think that they've given warnings as well. And I understand that they've been moving troops to the area too, that there is now a Russian buildup in Dagestan, which is in the Caucasus. It's a region of Russia in the Caucasus. And well, we'll see how it goes. But that, to the extent that there is a plan, that is the plan that we are.
It's a chaotic dynamic, if that's the plan. You get Azerbaijan involved, that's a puppet state of Turkey.
Yes.
But you also get the Kurds involved, which is an existential threat to Turkey.
Threat to Turkey, exactly.
So Turkey jumps in and does what exactly? It goes after the Kurds, but then also goes to protect Azerbaijan. But then again, when you look at how the U.S. has conducted stuff in Syria and in other places, it's been that type of policy where you're arming one group and you're attacking another.
Yes.
And you just create chaos and destruction.
Exactly.
Elza says, Alex just posted Nikki's comments about Russia helping Iran. She's back connecting the dots better than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nikki Haley is back. Yeah. She's complaining. She's saying that Putin is providing targeting for Iran to go after U.S. troops. And then she referenced the Washington Post article.
Well, of course, that's the other thing that's going to happen. If it all turns out terribly, disastrously wrong, the neocons are going to blame two people. One is they're going to blame Donald Trump. They're going to say it was Donald Trump. He didn't stay the course. He had an erratic approach to this. He didn't listen to our wise advice. They're going to blame him. The other person, of course, whom they're all going to blame, inevitably, unavoidably, is Vladimir Putin. It's Russia's fault. It's Putin's fault that we got into this mess. And this is a further reason why we must escalate our unending attempts to remove him.
Yeah, we're just missing Christopher Steele.
Exactly. Oh, don't worry. I'm sure he's around. He's probably preparing his next report now.
We're with Professor Mifsud. OMG, Mr. T says, what will be the Russian reaction if Azerbaijan is sending troops to attack Iran?
It'll be incredibly negative, and we'll see how it plays out. We'll have to see. But as I said, I have heard these reports that the Russians have already prepared indictments against the Azerbaijanian leaders, and notice that relations between Azerbaijan and Russia collapsed last year. So we'll see how it plays out.
Can I just say one thing? There is
one thing the Russians can do immediately, which is that they can turn off Azerbaijan's oil exports. They have to pass through Russian-controlled territory. Russia could just switch off the tap. They don't need to attack Azerbaijan physically. They could just create a massive crisis for Azerbaijan in that way. And by the way, they did that for a period last year.
Yeah, and they're extremely dependent on their oil exports.
Absolutely.
That's all they got.
Yes.
Sergei Lavrov told the Gulf states, really, you made your bed, supporting America, lie in it.
Well, Lavrov is saying many things. I mean, he's making that point. But as I said, the Russians at the moment do seem to be trying to work with the Gulf states in order to bring this thing to an end. Whether they succeed, of course, is an entirely different question.
Jungle Jin says, Donald J. McCain Netanyahu. 1965.9, thank you for that super sticker. Audio 313, thank you for that super sticker. Elza says, Alex is using Alensky language. Jungle Jin says, U.S. is hammering Bandar Abbas in an effort to neutralize the shore batteries covering the Strait of Hormuz. Can the U.S. gain control of the strait?
I would have thought not, actually. I mean, shore batteries, missiles, they can attack tankers, but drones can also attack tankers, as we've now seen. Iran probably has an infinite supply of those. The area around the Straits of Hormuz is apparently very mountainous, very rocky. There are lots of caves, lots of places to hide. I doubt that you can open the Straits of Hormuz completely.
And the issue is not, I mean, yes, you have the tankers being attacked, but the big issue is the insurance and the risk factor.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
If there's a risk, if the insurers, if Lloyd's of London considers it too much of a risk, they're not going to insure.
Precisely.
Sanjeva says, oops, Alex, you said the F word. Naughty corner for you. Thanasi is a new member to the Drad community. Welcome, Thanasi. Elza says, Alex is dropping F Oreznik's. Fuzzy Ball says, difficult question. Who are the best and worst leaders of the group? Zelensky, Starmer, Macron, Merz, or Trump?
Oh, goodness.
Gorbachev
says, I'm not going to give it. They're all bad.
Gorbachev says, you gentlemen failed to grasp that the Dow is up.
And? I mean, there may be all kinds of reasons for that. What does that even mean, actually?
Yeah. Geo Stone says, what will the Arab countries look like after this?
Well, it's a very, very good question. Never the same. I mean, this whole mirage that we had of stable, peaceful countries in the Gulf that you could invest your money in, come and live in and enjoy a good life in Dubai and be completely secure. That's, I think, fallen apart, probably forever.
Yeah. Turbo Too Tall says, don't hold back, Alex, let it all out.
Yeah.
Danielle says, in an interview with Dana Bash, Trump said he now says he'd be happy to install an undemocratic religious leader so long as they treat the U.S. and Israel fairly.
Well, there you go. That's, I mean, it's all over the place. I mean, he says one thing one day, something completely different the next day. Yeah. As I said at the beginning, it's chaos. And it also suggests stress and nerves.
If that's the case, then end this conflict and Khamenei is the next leader or whoever. I mean, if that's the case, and start talking to Iran and try to get that fair treatment, I guess. I mean, what is the problem then if that's if that's what Trump is saying? Yes. Sergey,
you're worried about, you know, Iran being led by people you consider their religious fanatics. We are not. I mean, whoever leads Iran who comes from the same theological religious background is going to have inevitably the same sort of views. It's unrealistic to expect otherwise.
Sergey Pajoin says, Iran, don't give up fighting neocons.
No.
RBU 83145 says, Trump is boxed into a corner. Don't believe the U.S. can win. Will he use nuclear weapons if all else fails?
Well, I hope we don't get into that kind of situation. I'm going to make a prediction. If Trump starts seriously talking and thinking about those kind of things, then I think you will start to see the various fail-safes in Washington start to being activated. I'm going to make a guess. The Joint Chiefs of Staff will start to protest. There'll be complaints about this wider within the political system. And it might arise, a situation might arise, where Trump might himself lose control. So I don't want to discuss this, but there are fail-safes and there are constitutional fail-safes in that situation. A much bigger danger is if the crisis deepens, what might Israel do? Now, I am assuming that the United States has a kill switch over Israeli use of nuclear weapons. But that might be, that might, I was going to say, yeah.
Don't be so sure. The Alkali says the Dow is not up. It just looks up compared to the dollar.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
A many man says, any opinion regarding America's role in a large regional conflict?
Well, the United States should keep out of regional conflicts. Why should the United States be involved in regional conflicts? It should not be. The United States is blessed with being surrounded by oceans, friendly neighbors, a massive economy, a huge technology base, immense prosperity, countries that want to trade with it. Regional conflicts, quite apart from the terrible effect on morality and ethics in the US itself, which we're seeing at the moment, and quite apart from the devastation they cause, all they do is they sap the power of the United States. They mean that American resources are being diverted away from building up the prosperity of the United States itself to pursue these ephemeral objectives in all of these other places, which are not in America's interests. Lindsey Graham, just to say this, is not a true patriot. If he was, he would not be advocating war for the United States in all of these places all the time.
Pamela, thank you for that super chat. Beto Macedo says, good morning from Brazil. OMG Puppy says, neocons say they want to create liberal democracy, but their wars only result in destroyed chaotic societies. The purpose of a system is what it does.
What did I once say? The Romans used to say, about the Romans, it was said that they create a desert and call it peace. The Americans create chaos and call it freedom.
Lord Kaidu says, long time no see, gentlemen. Having said that, I now believe the long or new peace is officially dead. Crinkle Cut, thank you for that super chat. Raul Pinto says, sustained $200 oil would trigger global stagflation characterized by double-digit inflation and a severe bear market in transportation and retail. Thoughts on the impact to Europe?
You've described them. I mean, the Europe. I mean, bear in mind, we're in a much weaker position economically than we were during the last oil shock to 2022. And we saw what the effect of all of that was. It triggered a progress of deindustrialization. And we are in a far worse position than we were in earlier oil shocks like those of 1973 and 1980. Through both of which I lived. If we have that kind of crisis, then, as I said, for Europe, it's going to be absolutely devastating economically. It'll be enormous unemployment, inability of many people to continue to pay their bills with all of the effects on the wider economy that we've seen. And just to make a further point, I think it is widely accepted that the very steep rise in oil prices that took place in the mid-2000s was one of the proximate causes of the 2008 crisis in the financial markets. And we did this live stream yesterday, and we saw what Alex and from Reportify and Cyrus Jansen were saying about a surge in oil prices, the kind of effect it would have on the financial markets, which are very fragile now, what the effect of such a high oil price might be.
Yeah. Sparky says, guess there won't be any orders for Boeing or Airbus from the Middle East anytime soon. Well. Turbo Tutal says, can't express enough why the world needs you to be safe and healthy.
Thank you
for that. Huff Duff says, so it seems the U.S. lost all bases and showed U.S. only cares about Israel. The supply chain issue can't be solved. Iron Dome failed. Making this religious war is a mistake. Iran has Trump stun-looked.
Well, yes, he does. And I mean, again, it's clear, it is already becoming clear that the war is not playing out in the way that the US intended, that the Trump and the small group of people around him intended or expected. I mean, there's not been the great revolution on the streets of Iran. Remember what Trump said on the first day? Come out into the streets, seize the buildings, take control, win back your country. Who in Iran at the moment is doing any of that?
You could also make an argument that the fact that we haven't seen the protests in the streets refutes the whole protest that took place about a month ago. The whole narrative behind that, including the numbers that they keep on throwing out there of deaths.
Correct.
You could make that argument.
You absolutely could make that argument. In fact, I do make that argument.
Yeah.
Just to say.
Lord Kaidu, thank you for that super sticker. Fernando Loveless says, the blue wave the next 4 years is going to be epic. As a three-time Trump voter, I'm sick to look at him. Trump destroyed the base. Vance needs to resign and run. Do you think that's a good point? It's an interesting point. Do you think that, or do you know if even Vance could distance himself from the White House? Can he resign? Would it be a good move for Gabbard, say for Gabbard or Vance, or anyone that's, or Colby, anyone that's not in agreement with this neocon policy right now playing out? Do you think it would be a good move for them to resign and start speaking out against it? Or what are your thoughts there?
The conventional answer to that is no. I mean, remember, I'm a politician's nephew. I was very close to my aunt. There were many times when she found herself in conflict with the prime minister, as I happen to remember, Papandreou. But she always told me that it would be a mistake to resign and that the effect of a resignation is marginalization. You lose all influence. You're no longer able to control what's going on, have any influence over what's going on in the government. And especially at a time of crisis, you need to be there to offer wise counsel and to put the pieces back together again when things do go wrong. I think this particular crisis that we are seeing at the moment is so extreme that it may come to the point when resignations become unavoidable. And yes, I think the vice president can resign.
Hollywood says, what about the Strait of Hormuz? Will it be reopened now after this apology? What are the chances for that?
Well, Pezeshkian said absolutely nothing about that. At the moment, there's no reason to think this.
Jarell Holder says, Iran Quds Force leader arrested. He is a Mossad spy.
So which leader?
The Quds forces?
The Quds leader. Oh, yeah. I see. The. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
there were some reports about that they captured Mossad agents.
Yes.
Or they claim Mossad agents with a Polish passport or something like
that's
that.
Right. That's right. And that a senior Iranian defense ministry official has been arrested. I mean, I'm not going to speculate about this because I just don't know enough about this to be able to say. I would be surprised if the Quds Force, which is the special forces unit within the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps, is headed by a Mossad spy. That seems to me unlikely. But then we've seen how easily penetrated Iran has been in the past. So who knows?
Yeah, keep in mind that there's going to be a lot of information war to try and create tension in Iran.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. To be honest, I think we've already seen it to some extent with the various reports about Pezeshkian's statement. I don't think that it's been reported accurately or properly. And as I said, the fact that he appears to have said most of these things in a call to Putin, I don't think I've seen that at all, just to say.
Imada says, if the U.S. takes a beating in the Middle East, do you see it becoming more aggressive against Latin America? Love your show.
Yeah, absolutely. If the same crowd remain in control, I mean, if they feel that they failed in one place, they will move.
He's already saying it.
Absolutely. He's
Cuba
talking
next.
About Cuba. Cuba next. Exactly. Yeah.
Sham gifted the Duran 5 memberships. Thank you for that. Emma Valentina says, how would you compare the selling of the Iran war to the general public in contrast to the Iraq war?
Oh, the Iraq war was far better done. I mean, it was much better managed. I mean, it was mendacious. It was deceitful. It was completely manipulated. But the American people strongly supported the Iraq war at the beginning. Three quarters of them did. Three quarters of them opposed this war. I mean, that tells you the difference.
Yeah. Upendeka says, why Israel has so much leverage over every U.S. government?
That is a massive and very important question. Behind me, there is the book that Steve Waltz and John Mearsheim wrote, which discusses all of this in detail. It is about that thick. I'm really not joking. Go to it, read it, and you'll find all your answers there.
Phone off Alex says, I am nominating Sleazy Graham to be ambassador of U.S. to Iran and like to see what happens.
Well, indeed, yeah.
Sparky says, anytime someone says Israel is our friend in the Middle East, I can't help but think before Israel, we had no enemies in the Middle East. U.S. missionary John Sheehan.
That's an excellent point, and it's something that people ought to bear in mind about. It's not about ending Israel. It is about a completely different approach to foreign policy.
Gioson says, how much weaker will the U.S. be after Trump leaves?
Well, it's already looking weaker. I would have thought, when the whole point of Trump was to do the opposite, to make America stronger. But strength is internal. That was how America became strong in the first place, through its mighty industries, its technology, its strong financial system, and above all, its constitution and what came with that. What the neocons are doing is they are frittering all that away, and they're corrupting the political system. Well, they've completely corrupted the political system as well, so that someone like Epstein has all the influence that we have seen.
Marcus Pfeiffer says, how to get rid of the bipartisan Epstein regime?
I don't know. I mean, that's a question for Americans to answer. I mean, I once hoped that, you know, with Trump and all of that, if not Trump himself, the movement that he represented might have that effect. But at the moment, it doesn't seem as if it will.
Elsa says, didn't the U.S. use AI to plan military campaigns? And the results is we've seen we'll send the Kurds and all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, AI has its uses, but it cannot replace human thought and human decision. And it's a massive mistake to assume that it can.
Yeah. Sabina says the U.S. is about to self-balkanize.
Yeah.
Cynthia, thank you for that super sticker. Red Axis says liberalism is a tool of imperialism. It ensures national assets stay in private hands and socially divides the people into identity groups who fight one another.
There's been a very long current of scholarship, especially in Britain, on that very issue. I mean, for example, J.S. Mill, who is one of the great heroes of 19th century British liberalism, was a fervid imperialist. Just saying.
Zariel says, Bondi has been subpoenaed. Good.
Yeah.
Chaz says, will Finland's recent comments about hosting nukes start World War III?
No, I don't think so. But, I mean, they are very disturbing. And look how completely Finland has gone from one position of being neutral, not hosting nukes, not having bases, to going to the absolute other extreme. What a disaster for Finland.
Matthew says, will Trump escalate to the nuclear level?
Well, I think I've discussed that already.
Yeah. No Bun Age says, was Russiagate actually Epstein Gate? If they were all implicated in Epstein files, it could make sense. Israel may have PP tapes, Putin equals Bibi.
I would not be in the least bit surprised if we find that there is an overlap between the two. But we are still very, very early stages of understanding either of these scandals, just to say.
Trump has done nothing with regards to Russiagate, has he?
No.
I mean, Tulsi Gabbard has done stuff, but she's been shut out now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything about Russiagate.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ackerman, thank you for that super sticker. Akashi, this says the Samson option. Betty says, one thing never discussed nor asked about in the Russia-Ukraine negotiation is what happens to the AFU leaders, mercenaries, far-right CIA-trained Nazis that remain. What do you think happens?
Well, I mean, Putin has in the past talked about trials, war crimes trials for these people. He has talked about it. Whether it will ever be executed, I don't know. The Ministry of Defense has talked about it rather more.
Elsa says, watching Trump in the Oval Office with the crowd around him praying for war begs the question, who are the religious fanatics?
Well, I have to say, I thought that was a disastrous call. I mean, I personally found it upsetting.
Samuel Moroni says, new EU sanctions on Georgia, new color revolution?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Endless attempts to engineer color revolutions in Georgia, too.
Yeah, they never back
down. They never end.
They never stop, yeah.
No.
Moondragon says Zelensky is angry that no one talks about him now.
Yeah, absolutely. He's furious about it. He's seething.
Shifty Russian says, love your channels. Keep up the good work. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. John and D says, oil is currently closing in on 100. What is your thoughts on it reaching 150 to 200 a barrel?
What I've been told is this. If it reaches 100... then $150 a barrel comes within sight within a few days. I mean, the whole thing starts to gain momentum. And I read on oilprice.com that there is no ceiling to how high oil could go in this mood and in this market. I mean, it won't stay at, you know, $200 a barrel or whatever it is forever, because it cannot. I mean, there would be a crash in demand, and that will in turn lower the price. But in the short term, it could go that high.
Sparky says, even if President Trump pulls out, Iran should continue on Israel so as to return Palestine to the Palestinians.
Well, I think that one should be very careful to ask a country to fight another country's war, another nation's war in that way.
Polly says, coming Monday, the 9th of March at 11 o'clock, the Kouf trial will take place in Amsterdam Court of Appeal against Bill Gates and other and others. Attention, please.
Yeah.
Mode Khan says, we see Trump becoming Biden 2.0.
Yes. I mean, he's not totally, he's Biden 2.0 plus at the moment.
Random Nobody says, I remember the bomb drills in elementary school. Who would have thought that 2026 would remind me of that feeling?
Well, indeed, exactly. I have exactly the same feeling.
Geostone says, BlackRock Limited withdrawals playing possible GFC.
Yeah.
RBU831 says, how angry are the people of Cyprus with threats of being a military target and colonization by Israelis? I don't see much anger around here, to be quite honest. No. Everything so far is pretty calm.
Yes.
Stick People Rule says, why doesn't Iran buy a nuke from NK?
Well, because they said repeatedly that they don't want nukes. I mean, they have the fatwa, which rules it out. If Iran wanted nukes, had really wanted nukes, it could have had them decades ago. That's the reality.
Sean Farley says, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I'm not sure I've ever heard the Duran call out the genocide in Palestine.
Oh, we've spoken about it so many times. I mean, this is serious.
You must be new to the channel,
yes.
Sean.
Yes.
AM9007, thoughts on British political impact, stagflation, oil crisis, Farage as the new Thatcher, reform wasting the opportunity since pro-Trump and pro-war.
Oh, indeed. I think they made a major miscalculation there and have misjudged the mood in the UK heavily. For the moment, politics in Britain, somewhat surprisingly, is swinging left. We're getting reports that the Greens are going to break through in a big way. And I saw an opinion poll that said that in London, they're going to push Labour into fourth place in London, which is the most important Labour stronghold. So given the kind of positions that the Greens have on most political topics, including unrestricted immigration, by the way, which very few people seem to be aware of, well, you know, you can judge for yourself. But I agree. I think that Farage has not understood this. I mean, this was a moment to take a strong sovereigntist position. That's what people expect of reform. And getting too close to Trump over this was a mistake. Like running Matt Goodwin in Gorton and Denton was a mistake as well, in my opinion.
Getting too close to Trump, that might have been a big mistake. I actually think Orban getting too close to Trump might hurt him.
Exactly.
Marcus Pfeiffer says, is Jackson Hinkle right? Were we programmed to believe communism is bad because it's the only thing the Epstein class fears?
I've been to communist countries, former communist countries. I'm not going to discuss them in huge amount of detail at this point because that is a colossal thing. But all I will say is that the criticisms that you hear about communist countries, many of them were true.
Pablo Kez, thank you for that super sticker. Hermitage Prepper says, Iran has done Gulf a favor, alerting them to the USA's true loyalty. Huckabee laid out greater Israel plan. USA and bases would be used to conquer the Gulf for Israel.
Well, I think we've touched on all of these topics over the course of this program, yeah.
One Red Phillip is a new member to the Durant community. Jungle Jin says, going elsewhere. Yes, Cuba. Also Africa, big time.
Well, Cuba, Africa, Brazil at some point.
Greenland.
Greenland. I mean, you know, it is completely out of control. It's no longer a strategy. It's becoming a rampage.
Yeah. Palooza says, what are the consequences of this mess to the U.S.?
Well, grave. I mean, the U.S. is an oil and gas exporter. But if oil prices rise in the way that they're doing, it is going to have a significant impact on the U.S. domestic economy. And it's going to have a significant impact on the U.S. political system. It could trigger a crisis there. A crisis similar to the one I remember in the United States in the 1960s over Vietnam, only much greater this time.
John Matthew says, seems BRICS is dead. Russia, China look obsolete powers. India is gone. Why China behaves so cowardly? Is Putin the right leader for Russia currently?
And all of this, just as we're getting reports in the US media that the Russians are providing intelligence support to Iran. I discussed this so many times and so many things. There's no point in repeating oneself here. BRICS, if Iran falls, it will be a blow for them. It will not be the end. India is buying oil from Russia at increasing amounts. China is obtaining oil from Russia in increasing amounts. China is providing help to Iran. Russia appears to be providing even more help to Iran.
World 3504 gifted the Duran 5 memberships. Yes. Thank you for that. Geostone says, do you give credit to the 100-year empire cycle end?
No, I don't. I think these are far too dogmatic attempts to try to understand how empires rise and fall. The Roman Empire lasted for 500 years, just to say.
Pablo Cos says, are you familiar with St. Paisios's prophecies? They seem closest to fruition.
No, I'm not. I don't know whether you are, Alex.
Worf 3504 says, I hope the membership helps to boost the channel on YT. Thank you guys for the coverage. Thank you, Worf, very much. Thank you.
Yes.
Answer questions. Thank you for that super chat. Nexus Gamering. Can Turkey, Greece, and Cyprus work together with the UK base in Cyprus? Thank you.
In what way? In what way exactly? I mean, I'm not sure what the purpose of that would be. The key thing at the moment between Greece, Turkey, and Cyprus is to maintain peace. That seems to me to be the overriding priority. And with someone like Erdogan, this is not always an easy thing to do, just saying.
Yeah. Emeta says, is there a possibility of the oil derivatives market imploding? I saw an analyst saying something about it.
Yes, I mean, lots of people are saying all kinds of things about the financial system. I would suggest, by the way, go to our watch our live stream of yesterday with Alex of Reportify and Cyrus Jansen, because they discuss all of these topics. And Alex had an awful lot to say about the situation in the derivatives markets, which he understands very well.
Yeah, check out that live stream from yesterday. Mm. Sir Muggs Game says, how come Cyprus hasn't switched on its S-300? Or has Uncle Vlad said yet?
Has Cyprus still got an S-300?
They have.
But it had gone a long time ago, yeah.
I think Greece as well. Didn't they give it all
up?
Yeah,
exactly. In fact, my recollection is Cyprus doesn't even have it. You're quite right. Turkey objected. It ended up in Greece.
Mitsotakis, I think, gave it all up, and he went full in with Zelensky.
Yes, exactly. So, as I said, we don't have an S-300.
Yeah. Sparky says, according to Scott Ritter, President Nixon made a deal with Israel that they need U.S. approval before using nukes, but Scott didn't say whether there are physical barriers or if it's just on paper.
Well, exactly. That's the key difference, because as we've seen, a paper agreement of that kind is meaningless, as the Russians never failed to point out. And by the way, as Pezeshkan reminded Putin over the course of the telephone conversation that took place early today, which we've been discussing on this program, Israel and Iran using Russia's good offices back in December came to an agreement that neither would attack the other.
That is true.
So, given that this is so, who places any value on agreements of that kind?
You had the JCPOA as well.
Exactly.
That was an agreement ratified by the UN.
Exactly. Exactly.
MY says, good morning. Can you elaborate on the flashpoint between Iran, Azerbaijan, Turkey? I suspect it is tactically and strategically significant.
Yes, it is. We've said this before, and I'm going to we'll repeat this again. I think that in Tehran, amongst the political leadership there, this is the issue of their greatest concern. This is what they're worried about most. I think that the bombing of northern Tehran is a terrible thing for them. The attacks on all their various bases is a terrible thing for them. But the biggest single worry they have is precisely this: what might happen on their northwestern borders.
Phone off. Alex says, protesters in Iran a month ago been burning fire engines and ambulance vehicles, so first responders' ability will be degraded.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
Sir Musgame says, British don't want to risk a missile strike on a ship. Think HMS Sheffield struck by Exocet missile. British intel remember these things.
Of course they do. But I mean, the other thing to say is that the Royal Navy in the 1980s, at the time of the Falklands War, was a powerful force with lots of ships and great deal of redundancy. It is a wilted thing today. It's very, very small.
Flip the script says oil stocks like TPET are 100% and rising.
Yeah.
Okay. Zizi Karayanis, thank you for that super sticker. Elena Diaz says, where is Netanyahu? What kind of leadership is he offering from Germany?
Well, this is the rumor is that he's in Berlin. I have to say, if that's true, then that really doesn't say much for him.
Yeah. Sparky says, build a better world with BRICS.
Yeah.
Sparky says, go answer Allah, fight the power. Mm-hmm. Nick M says, which country is most important for China that the U.S. will go after next to try and prevent their continued rise?
By far, the single most important relationship for China is the one with Russia. That is the key relationship. And all of the others can be, they're inessential. But the relationship with Russia is essential. And the Chinese will do everything they can to preserve it.
John Matthew says, thank you. What is India up to? Are they trustworthy?
Well, the Iranians are furious with India at the moment. They're very angry over the business of the Iranian frigate that went to India to participate in an exercise. They are furious that India hasn't protested the sinking of that warship. I understand there are many people in India itself who are very, very upset and angry with it. My own sense about Prime Minister Modi is that he is very narrowly focused on Indian national interests as he sees them. So he buys oil from Russia. He does deals. He's negotiating a free trade agreement with Russia. He wants to buy Sukhoi 57 fighter jets from the Russians, but he doesn't want at the same time to antagonize the US, and he wants good relations with Europe as well. And at the same time as he's doing all of these things, he wants to improve relations with China. He does make missteps. I think his decision to travel to Israel was a huge misstep. I think it was completely wrong thing to do on the eve of what everybody could see was a war, but there it is.
Zachariah Seed says, Farage's stupidity is an outright security threat. No understanding of international relations, sovereignty, geopolitics, or domestic politics. Worst time for this clown to be blowing it.
I've always said this about Farage. As an opposition leader, he's brilliant, especially when he focuses on one topic, which is an issue that concerns the British electorate. He's very untested as a potential leader of a country, as a potential prime minister. When he starts to aspire for that, his limitations start to show.
Geostone says, thank you. Thank you both so much for answering the questions. Thank you, Geostone. Nico says, Europe's stance at Russia reminds me of the Byzantine Empire during their downfall when they said they preferred Islam than to be saved by Catholics.
Well, I think the parallel, I'm not sure I completely agree with the parallel, but your point that this is completely self-defeating is absolutely true.
Sir Muzgame says they've got them. Ah, the S-300s. Okay, maybe.
Oh, maybe.
I'm positive.
I've not heard about them.
No. Yeah, I'm positive they're not going to break them out. Or if they've got them, there must be some sort of negotiations or something to get rid of them. Yeah, the U.S. is not going to allow Cyprus to have them or to use them.
Exactly.
At all, yeah.
Exactly.
Sean Farley says, thanks for your reply. One more esoteric interp relations. The astrology for the U.S. at the moment is potentially revolutionary.
Well, okay.
Thank you for that. Sir Musgave says, I've said too much, Chow. Thank you, Sir Musgave. Sparky says, Alex, any recent uptick in the rate of Israeli refugees arriving to Cyprus? No. No one's really arriving. There's no uptick in people arriving to Cyprus. There's a lot of tension in the region in general.
I mean, do bear in mind that with flights frozen across the Middle East, movements of people are going to be very difficult.
Yeah. Nico says the Ukrainians damaged radars on a Russian ship in Novorossiysk. How quickly can Russia repair their ships and produce them? Should they move the fleet?
Very rapidly is the short answer. And no, they won't move the fleet. And the other thing is, always be very, very careful about these reports. About a week ago, I was discussing, I think on this program, on this channel, but also on my own channel, the alleged Ukrainian strike on the factory, the ballistic missile factory in Votkinsk, the missile factory in Russia. And there was this big hole in the warehouse. It was all based on satellite data. I've now seen more and more people say this is an AI fake, so be very careful.
Peter Pubjectsy, thank you for that super chat. Adeadola says, might you two gentlemen invite a scientist aboard the show to discuss the energy requirements of these wars and the possible environmental implications of all this destruction? Thank you.
It's an excellent idea. And by the way, I can think of some people who might be able to do that.
Kobian says, Yankee, go home. There is much work to do.
Yeah.
Open View Ozzy says, hi, guys. The Roman Empire lasted about 500 years when information traveled very slowly. Today, information spreads instantly. Does this make modern superpowers like the U.S. more stable or more fragile?
I think that making those kind of comparisons is unwise. I think also that there's something else to say, which is that the United States can remain a superpower if it manages its international relations wisely. One of the reasons why the Roman Empire continued for so long is because the Romans did manage their international relations wisely. Caesar Augustus actually said, we must never let ourselves become overextended. And he even gave an instruction to his successors not to expand the empire further.
Yeah. Also, technology can help maintain an empire as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely true.
Yeah. Blonde Summum Ballist says, eternally grateful, lads, for your insights. Thank you for that. Nico says, just because you have a population that procreates like rabbits, that doesn't mean you are a superpower. India doesn't have social cohesion. Maybe wash out.
Well, India is a very, very complex society with enormous problems. It clearly isn't a superpower at the moment. It has the potential to become one, but this is still very, very much a work in progress.
JML75 says, what would be the consequences for the European political class of a Western defeat in both Iran and Ukraine?
I mean, massive. I mean, it would be, if that were to happen, it would no longer be possible to deny any longer that we are looking at a situation of relative decline in the power of the West.
Sir Muggs Game says, HMS Dragon will reach Cyprus in 2 weeks, ergo this latest episode of When Two Tribes Go to Boom Boom will be over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
Sparky says, Israel is a win-win for Palestinians and Iran, so it's not exactly fighting someone else's war, in my opinion.
Well, again, it depends. I mean, the point I was simply making, if Iran becomes involved in an indefinite war against Israel, which does have nuclear weapons, it needs to do so in its own national interests. And I'm not convinced that, you know, trying to do that until the Israelis withdraw from, say, the West Bank is necessarily in Iran's nuclear in Iran's national interests. International relations, geopolitics, strategy needs to be considered very carefully. If Iran survives, if the political system in Iran survives, that might be more beneficial for the Palestinians in the long term than an indefinite war.
Miss Texas G, question. Alexander, did you already speak about Trump's call with Dana Bash saying he just wants Israel to be treated fairly? We got a question about that, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I know. I mean, which could be seen as Trump's attempts now to try and find an off-ramp. You see, this is the thing. Trump is saying all sorts of different things all at the same time. He appears still to be in a kind of exalted mood. You know, I'm going to pick the Ayatollah. I'm going to decide. I want unconditional surrender. I want all of these things. And at the same time, he seems to be saying, well, all I want, you know, I want is in Iran to agree to peace, which, by the way, is no different from what the Iranians have been saying they're prepared to agree to all along. So it's very confused and chaotic, and it tells you again how confused and chaotic the policy in Washington is.
Elsa says, will NATO use Article 5 to defend Cyprus? I didn't know that the clown Lamy is still around.
Well, indeed he is. And you're quite right. And it was astonishing comments that he made as well. But
what's his position? Then,
he is Deputy Prime Minister, which is a non-job in Britain, by the way.
It's a non-job. Just, okay. Okay, got it. J.S. Smith says, is strategy becoming chaos here, a case of Thucydides' trap playing out in real time, in real life?
I don't think so. A government like that of the United States could absolutely work out a sensible and rational strategy, even in Thucydides trap type situations. Personally, and I get to say this, I don't believe in the Thucydides trap. I think it's a complete misreading of what Thucydides actually said. I don't think Thucydides ever intended to say that there was something about the war between Athens and Sparta which was predetermined. And I think he always understood that in human action, there is always choice. He just explained why, in the case of the start of that war, the Spartans made that choice, which I suspect he didn't agree with.
Timothy Aldinger says, any chance David Sacks still listens to your ideas and holds any influence?
Who knows? Mm-hmm. I hope he does. I like David Sacks, not because of whatever influence he has or doesn't have. I actually think I have a great deal of respect for him. I think he's a clever man.
Yeah. Mr. Ego Prime says, I would love to hear your thoughts about possibility of independence of the Republic of Srpska from Bosnia and the possible unification with Serbia. Do you think it is politically possible?
It is certainly politically possible, but it might also be extremely dangerous. At the moment, I don't think that Serbia or Russia want that. I don't think they want another crisis on top of all of the other crises, this time in the Balkans.
OpenView Aussie says, hi, guys. If the U.S. sends ground troops into Iran, how likely is it that Russia would secretly deploy Special Forces Wagner to support guerrilla warfare against them?
I think the Russians will be very, very careful before they do anything of that kind. Again, it depends very much on how things play out, and it depends very much on whether Iran itself proves capable of defending itself. Even then, I don't think the Russians will do this in the way of providing special forces. They will provide intelligence, they will provide economic assistance, which nobody's talking about, but which is absolutely essential for Iran at this time. That CNN reporter who was in Iran was talking about how all the shops were full. Why are they full? That's a good question, and it could very well relate to economic help being provided by the other BRICS states, which we're not hearing about because people don't want to talk about it. Anyway, I think this is more likely what the Russians would want to do than to enter into, even via an organization like Wagner, into some kind of direct conflict with the American military.
Vincenzo, thank you for that super chat. Sir Muggs Game says, hey, Trump, Starmer can't be Churchill. Zelensky is Churchill. They'd be sucked into a space-time vortex, not endorsing anything.
Exactly.
Everyone's well Churchill, said. Alexander. Everyone's Churchill.
You know, people, we might one day do a program about Churchill because everybody gets Churchill completely wrong. Just to say.
Yeah, we should do a program on Churchill. This fascination, obsession with Churchill. Jin says, Professor Yang, predictive history pinpoints Iran's main vulnerability as being its water supply, something that no one else seems to have talked about.
Yes, it's true. I mean, there were major water shortages in Tehran and all of these kind of things. Iran has many, many problems which are longstanding and which have, I think, been greatly increased by the very chaotic way in which Iran has been administered since Pezeshkian's election, just to say.
Elena Diaz says, will Ukraine survive 2026 without the help of Western powers?
Well, if the Russians continue the war and if things in Iran continue the way they are, then the probable possible answer may be no.
Nico says, can we officially qualify Netanyahu as one of the worst human beings in history? Also, in honor of Iran, I'll make a top 10 list about their leaders.
I think Netanyahu has been a disastrous leader for Israel, for the region, and for the world. But to start talking about him being one of the worst 10 leaders of history, I mean, you know, compared with whom exactly? I mean, you know, Caligula, Nero, Commodus among Roman emperors, the fascist dictators of the 30s. I mean, we must be careful not to engage in that kind of hyperbole, at least not at the moment.
Sparky says, I'm talking no Israel at all, no just withdrawal from West Bank, Gaza, etc.
Yeah, no, those possibilities are certainly being talked about. They're not going to happen imminently. I mean, Israel is still going to be there next year and the year after that and beyond that. But the Israeli leadership, in my opinion, has been on a completely wrong path. And the region is becoming more unstable and more dangerous.
The hockey goalie says, Trump just said Iran's comment is a surrender to their neighbors, Iran removing their best leverage, madness.
Well, indeed, that's Trump.
Did Trump just say that?
Well, I mean, he may have done. I mean, yeah, he may sure have said that. You wouldn't be surprised, I mean, it's the kind of thing he would say.
Yeah. Jamila says, thank you, gentlemen, for your great work. A question is, where is religious leaders, Muslim, Christianity, or others? They're waiting for Jesus to come to rescue them?
Well, I mean, let's, I mean, again, I speak as an Orthodox Christian. Let's keep religion a little bit to one side here and focus on the human actions.
Yeah, Trump did say that. Here's his post on Truth. Iran, which is being beat to hell, has apologized and surrendered to its Middle East neighbors and promised that it will not shoot at them anymore. This promise was only made because of the relentless U.S. and Israeli attacks. They were looking to take over and rule the Middle East. It is the first time that Iran has ever lost in thousands of years.
Yes, it's exactly, but it was exactly what we said. I mean, Pezeshkian is not the right leader for Iran, a president for Iran at this time. Because, of course, saying that is going to embolden Trump at precisely the moment when the pressure ought to be kept on him.
Yeah. Geostone says, if a ceasefire occurs, we will be here again.
Yeah. The Iranians themselves have said as much.
That girl, Casey, says, hello, thank you for the live stream. I just got here, so I'm not sure if you discussed Condoleezza Rice going to the White House and why that may have happened.
We have. We did mention it. We've discussed it before.
The wrong person to consult with, the Bush neocons. John says, can you discuss Viktor Orban's success or failure against the Green Goblin, against Zelensky?
Well, I think ultimately a lot will depend very much on what happens in the forthcoming election in Hungary. At the moment, I think Orban has probably gained some support in Hungary by taking the stand against Zelensky that he has done. Marwak is his opponent, is talking as if he sort of supports Orban on this issue, but
he has to come out in support of Orban. What's he going to do, come out in support of Zelensky?
Precisely. I mean, but you know, if Magwar wins, don't expect that to continue.
No, he's super EU.
Yes,
Magwar. Yeah. The post from Trump, Alexander, actually further down in the post, it's a long post. He says that today Iran will be hit very hard.
Yes, I know.
He calls them the losers of the Middle East. So he goes on about how Iran is losing and they've lost and they're losers. And then he says Iran will be hit very hard.
Yes, even
if Pezeshkian said that
in
the way that he said it, Trump has completely taken it the wrong way.
Yes, agreed. Yes. The other thing that Pezeshkian did say was that Iran would never surrender. So he's never not surrendered. Looking at that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Took it the exact wrong way.
Exactly. Pezeshkian, it's important to remember, is not a professional politician. He was a heart surgeon before. And as I said, he's clearly out of his depth in this situation. Larry Jani, who is the true leader of Iran at this time, what he says should be taken much more carefully.
Yeah. CCC says, one can feel helpless in these times. What do you both recommend doing to stay positive?
Well, remain positive. Don't let the events overwhelm you. And keep your head clear and be level-headed. I mean, that's all I can say. My own sense is that things in the end always find some way of righting themselves. That's been always my experience, and that's the thing to hold on to.
Jungle Jin says, will Hungary act against Ukraine over the Druzhba?
Well, they already are.
No, Bunaga says, Rice is Chevron. Condoleezza Rice is Chevron, big oil representative, too.
A very, very, very good point. And a disastrous person, by the way, to be consulting at this time, as ought to be obvious.
Yeah. Alexander, I think that's everything. Let me just check to make sure I got it all. And your final thoughts.
A superb live stream. I mean, lots of things going on, obviously. As I said, people need to understand, just to go back to this, people do need to remember that Pezeshkian is not the leader of Iran. He can say things, and as I said, he gets sometimes his messaging muddled, but he is not the person who makes the key decisions in Iran. That person at the moment appears to be Larijani, but it's quite possible that there's also a supreme leader already selected, and we haven't been told who he is. That's all.
Sir Musgame says these live streams make me miss Gonzalo. God rest him.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that.
For that.
Absolutely.
Your Eurogenist says you should do these live talks more often. Thank you.
We've been doing them every day. Every day over the last week.
Yeah. Trump should have taken that statement from Pezeshkian.
As an off ramp. Yeah.
And he should have come out with a statement saying, I don't know, I'm speaking with the Gulf countries and we're trying to find a way to stop the attacks as well. And
yes,
something he could have come up with something to shape it as an off ramp.
Yes. Yes.
But instead he went the exact opposite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. We'll end it there. We'll have videos up today on Alexander's channel and on my channel. So definitely check it out. Alexander Bakuris, Alex Christopher. Also go to our Substack, subscribe to our Substack, and also go to our Locals community as well, theduran.locals.com. And Alexander, I think we are done. Yeah, for this live stream.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us again today.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Take care.